Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of Epic. So here on the Eco News Report, we have an annual tradition around this time of year to have a poetry show to close out the year. And we have, as always, our two favorite poets on the show, Katie Gurin. Katie, in one part of her life, works as an environmental scientist doing watershed restoration work. And another part of her life is a poet who writes wonderful poetry that has, unsurprisingly, a lot of environmental themes. We also have Jerry Martin. Jerry Martin is probably familiar to most folks in Humboldt County. He has been the county's poet laureate and has produced numerous books of poetry throughout the years, taught at Cal Poly Humboldt. So I'm so glad to have these two guests with me today, and I'm really looking forward to hearing some poetry and to talk a little bit about the process of writing poetry and perhaps the moral obligations of folks like Katie and Jerry in this time who write on what are political matters, the environment. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Katie Gurin and Jerry Martin.
Well, first of all, I want to say I love that we're talking about moral obligation. And I wanted to start the show off with like a pretty serious poem. So I've been thinking about the administration's defunding and erasure of climate science. And in my first poetry collection, I tried to demonstrate how climate science can help us understand the current climate crisis. And yes, local government leaders, it is still a crisis, while also connecting us in a deep and meaningful way to the Earth. The evolution of life throughout Earth's history has had profound impacts on Earth's climate, and climate has, in turn, shaped the evolution of life. So the first poem I'll read is also the first in my collection about climate change. It's an imagined conversation between me and climate scientists. So it's a little bit surreal, as though I could just speak to all of them anytime I want. It's called Analogues. How bad will it be? I asked the scientists. To prepare for a climate change future, they said, learn Earth's history. This is your story, even though it's about you before you were human. In it, climate is central. Will it give me hope? I demanded. Sort of, they sighed. You'll have to feel grief first. Many worlds have been lost here on Earth. You'll learn that it's easy to destroy a world, but even then, it's no good to abandon it. We think life evolved once on Earth. Our ancestors were the first. And our family's history spans a quarter of the universes. Therefore, you can struggle alongside Earth's beings, your kin, and you can struggle for them. This could be a source of meaning. Perhaps there's hope in that. You're adrift, alienated by the harm you're complicit in and the harm you're a victim of. Earth's history, they said, will teach you about yourself. As you act, learn it.
Well, that was very nice. Immediately, it made me think about this notion of prehistory that we have, that we talk about time immemorial, that time from before there were written records. But I think your poem begins by talking about the writing of the Earth in kind of geologic terms, which is a fascinating thing to think about, how we can read the Earth in some respect.
Right. Yeah. And climate change is, you know, a really heavy topic, but also it teaches us a lot about how life and geology and atmosphere have interacted over the years. So it's also a point of connection.
Yeah, Jerry.
Yeah, I'm still going to read the same poem, start with the same poem that I read last year, because I've been doing this for 50 years. And I think continuity is what we need to keep hold of at the same time that we need to confront all the news that's coming at us. In with the old. Beach grass, broken shell, driftwood and sand. Old man, young dog, walking into a new year. Storm waves have pushed in from the bay and over this narrow spit of land, erasing any sign we've been here. Our world's going under, I say to the dog. On the near bank, the river has undercut its edge again. Mallard in the current, loon on the tide, with less and less between them. All my new poems are about my old poems, as if rivers or lost friends could be brought back by repeating a thing I'd said, only this time it came out right. As if the ground we're standing on, brought here by storm and flood, was more than silt, not the legacy of deforestation, but a new and solid ground, something to build another world on. Old man, young dog, warbler on a willow branch. The idea of that jackrabbit in the tall grass.
Beautifully read, too, Jerry.
It's a good dog poem.
It is a good dog poem. Is that good dog still around?
No, she's moved on.
How many years ago do you think you wrote that poem?
It's the beginning poem, or one of the beginning poems in a collection I'm just going to come out in January sometime. And I think I started it sometime around 2007. Hmm. No, going to be that long ago? More like, oh, no. See, the decades come and go. It was more like maybe 10 years ago.
How many poems do you think you have about the Elk River?
I think, boy, maybe a dozen.
Well, yeah. But that young dog's now old dog, dog that's passed. So is poetry a way for you to process this poem has itself aged? It feels it is about time as well. Is poetry a way that you process time going by? And is your feeling about poetry and time different now that you are self-described an old man than it was when you were more of a young buck?
I was a young idiot would be young. Poetry is about the only way I can process it. I was sort of had to invent a life as a poet in order to do that. With no formal training, no models, but it seems to have evolved into something. And maybe the poems are part of what I came here to do, which was let's move to a place we really like and invest our lives in it and live the best lives we can. I read some poems to a group of people the other night, and it occurred to me during the reading that talking about how things are now and how difficult it is and the struggle that we're in, and suggested that this is what we came here for, to put our lives into this place and to defend it and to be of some use. The poems are just part of that.
Yeah. Katie, if you were to describe the central topic that you're working through in your poetry, that you're kind of continually processing, do you have an answer to that? Is there a central thing that you are working through?
I have several central themes that I've been working with over the past few years. So the first poem I read was about climate change, and I was really obsessed with climate change and Earth's history for several years. And then I just finished a second manuscript. It's a series of addresses to various more than human beings. So, from the Milky Way to Jupiter to just all autotrophs. So, and so, yeah, I was really thinking about how you can conceive of a being when they're not human, and how you could speak to a being that's not human, not exactly using like human language or through human language, but in a way that might eventually be meaningful to another. And now I'm working on, I started reading utopian fiction and utopian poetry, and I'm just thinking about utopias.
Which feels in this moment, 2025, a funny thing to be thinking about, or maybe it's a nice thing to be thinking about, the world as it could be. Do you have anything that you would like to read from your utopia era?
Oh, no, not yet. Okay. Yeah, next time.
Next time. 2026 show. Here we go.
Okay. Yeah, right. Utopia is just around the corner.
Yeah. Yeah, things are seeming a little dystopian right now, but yeah. I can read some of the newer poems I have from the manuscript I just completed on addressing the more than human world. So
yes.
I'll start with a poem I wrote for the Milky Way. And I think this is a good poem for this time of the year because there are all these long nights, which are really great for stargazing, for the Milky Way. You fell around a strand of darkness, made your ruminating form. Then you pulled in others, setting off new stars and feeding a hub of inwardness, orbiting light flexed into an illusion of an orb, around one path, only forward, with time to roam in. You have a future, a merge, a flight, a meld. Then, in spreading space, solitude. For your eyed peoples, you'll be a universe.
Very lovely. The eyed peoples. I guess I'm one of those, aren't I? The perception of the universe. Man, kind of makes me feel happy to be alive, doesn't it? To be able to perceive the universe.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, apparently this is our shot, right?
Yeah. You might only get one.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. Well, that one of the strange, you're asking about how I've, what's poetry for in my life? And one of the things is, I mean, it's a way of finding out what's going on with me and around me. And the poems here are just like just before we read, before we started the show, I completely rearranged the poems that I was going to read because I realized I want to shape them in terms of the seasons. Started with a winter poem and then a spring poem and summer and so on. And one of the first things I got myself into about more than 50 years ago was a magazine that was called An Almanac. And this, the idea of the seasons and of getting in touch with the regular rhythms of this place, including its changes and its different rhythms. And I was looking for continuities and still am. This one is from spring and this is from my backyard. We're moving upriver now. We started at Elk River Spit, and now we're probably halfway up the river. Homeland security, on the highest arcing bramble of the rose, at the top of his range, the white crowned sparrow lets loose a wild note that isn't for the female deep in the tangle of thorns, and not for the eggs she's keeping warm, but for the hawk or cat thinking lunch, singing, he's singing, here, eat this note, and the generations go on.
Eat this note. That's great. I love that.
You are listening to the Eco News Report.
We have, as always, our two favorite poets. Katie Gurran works as an environmental scientist, and another part of her life is a poet. We also have Jerry Martin, poet laureate, and has produced numerous books of poetry throughout the years. Jerry, when you're working on poetry, is it a thing that you are thinking that I want to write a poem in a certain style, or I want to write a poem that addresses a certain subject, or is it that you are inspired by a place, thing, time, and that inspiration turns into poetry, or is it none of the above?
Yeah, I'm afraid it's none of the above. I wish my life was that coherent. I'm going to write a poem about, I'm better at writing a poem for an occasion, for a season, or for what's going on around me right now, and finding out where I am and where am I now and now what, and so on.
Do you find that you are a different person at the end of having written a poem? Is the process of writing a poem, is that transformative to you?
I hope so. I hate to be the same person. that poem didn't change me at all. that's a strange thing to think. But I mean, I never know what I'm thinking until I think and write it down. Or I don't have a plan. So here's a you want here's from summer.
Yeah.
Same backyard. I'm sitting on the porch looking out over the yard, and this turkey vulture comes over. What? Turkey vulture. Skimming the rooftops of the neighborhood, wings locked, holding, balanced on the coastal breeze. Looks down, not at me. Not me, but campanula, cranesbill, chamomile, cornflower blue, white snapdragons, pale roses. Dips a wing slightly, sails on toward the bay. A barely perceptible gesture, but unmistakable. The bird sees the garden. As I see the garden, looking at death, looking at beauty, same thing, same thing.
Lovely.
So scary stuff.
So Katie, a similar version to the same question I asked Jerry. You referenced the book that you wrote on. I got it. The word in my brain is salutations, but that's all right.
Addresses.
Addresses. Thank you.
Yeah. I like salutations, though. That's good.
So did you conceive of that theme, and then you sat down and wrote a number of things and came up with a list of people, things, whatever, Milky Ways that I would like to address, and then you did it in an orderly fashion? Because I imagine that in your work as an environmental scientist, you are very orderly, and that there's a lot of kind of process. Does that transfer over to the poetry writing process for you?
Yeah, I think I'm actually pretty deliberate about writing poetry, and I love doing research. Like, maybe I'm a little obsessive about things. So like, you know, when I'm writing. So yeah, I do sometimes write an outline, and I would encounter certain topics throughout the day and jot down notes, and I just get excited about the time that I'll get to write about them in the future. So yeah, I do. I start with an outline, and I start with a reading list, and I work at it.
Writing poetry is work.
Yeah. Great. Well, that's what I do with prose. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, Katie, can you please share another?
Yeah. So I thought I'd read a poem about winter, following Jerry's theme a little bit. So a few years ago, I worked on a habitat restoration and public access project in the Badawa Estuary. And I was part of a group of people who made sure this newly restored side channel was built according to plans and specifications. But once the channel was constructed and started to fill with water and interact with the river, it felt like it had its own life. So this poem is called To the New Badawat Side Channel. When you took your first breath of estuary, you were small, clear. Into the land, you inhaled amphipods, torn seaweed, fish food. We called you Side Channel at midnight under construction lights. We didn't give you a real name. We, your makers, hadn't the authority. When the water rose, we scrambled to move our tools. In the pre-dawn, the engineers staked the flood's peak, bringing their children to see it. Next morning, wading to our hips, we traced banks we'd drawn. Around us, river gulped sky. Until the winter, your voice was indistinct. Who are you now? As you negotiated with the ocean and whispered to the river, we listened like eavesdroppers in another room.
Well, two fascinating poems back to back, Katie, in terms of giving life to or conceptualizing non-human abiotic things, a side channel, and or the Milky Way, and making them a person. That was lovely. As I was listening to it, I was thinking about, I've had three or four friends this year all give birth, and the way that you were talking about the side channel was just so familiar to the way that I've had all these conversations about their newborns and their hopes for them and what they're going to become and all of these things. And that same process of you're giving birth to something, you're putting it out into the world, and it's going to become something that you have no idea, but that you love it at the same time. I started to tear up when you were reading that poem, because it just reminded me of June and Sloan and all the other newborns that I know.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's great. I felt that way a little bit too while writing it, like, and while experiencing like this new channel coming alive. But I haven't been around, I've never been around a human birth. So I don't know. Actually, I'm glad that like that connotation exists in your mind, because I feel like that was what I thought too.
Yeah. Well, I think that we probably have about time for one poem each. Jerry, your turn.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is very cool, the way we're pursuing. I think that the different times of in our lives, as well as our different occupations, our different ways of coming at life. This is now we're up river in headwaters, and it's fall, a windy day in the woods. Near the pond, about a mile in, about as far as I go anymore, a gust comes through the trees, and then in the silence, as if from everywhere, enormous maple leaves let go from huge moss-laden branches, from trees older than the surrounding second-growth redwood forests. Like airborne, weightless lily pads of the air, yellow and yellow-brown and yellow-green, the last patches of chlorophyll to catch the last going away light of the solar year, like a rain of happy suicides leaping free, everyone its own parachute, twisting and turning and dipping and somersaulting, a shower of used up tree skin, the thin flesh of open palms held all summer to the sun, let go, thin and brittle parchment leaves of the book of the woods, letting go their binding, floating, airborne between sky and earth, where each one lands with a whisper, a rustle of brittle parchment, each landing a crisp whisper, a last quiet gasp. Hush, hush, gliders coming home like ghosts of a mission no one survived. Bravely done, bravely done. Come home, come home.
Well, that was a delight. I was transported to that forest, Jerry. Katie.
Yeah, I love that poem.
Yeah.
Jerry, I love used up tree skin.
Yeah, I chuckle at that. Well, so actually, I'll interrupt briefly. Jerry, humor in poetry, it almost feels a little bit profane. I imagine you have used up tree skin as almost a little joke in the poem. Can you talk about intermixing humor into poetry and is this something you commonly do in your work?
Not on purpose. No, it is life. I mean, life has always seemed to me funny and tragic at the same time. I'm grateful for the comic part. You know, really, it helps. And maybe I don't know. I've done a lot of my poetry is written around reading it aloud to people, and I feel that some of the things we have to deal with are way better if we can see the comic side of them or tragedy is ending and comedy is like continuity. So it's like, so we laugh and we go on,
Yeah. All right, Katie, I will have you close out the show with one last poem.
So this last poem I wrote when I lived in Southern California. I lived in a community that suffered from terrible air pollution. It was next to some large shipping centers, and emissions from cars and freight were bad enough that it was actually unsafe to breathe the air for much of the summer. And while I lived there, an assembly member, Eloise Gomez Reyes, wrote a bill that would phase out diesel trucks and improve the air in the community. And it didn't pass, but I wrote this poem to celebrate it anyway. The bill was called the Integrated Action Plan for Sustainable Freight, or AB 1411. Ever since I read AB 1411, I've had a feeling in my mouth. Like I could snatch a diesel engine and hold it there, squirming. It's an unfamiliar feeling, like money doesn't govern, like I'll never be tired, and I'm done with grief.
I love that you wrote a poem based on an assembly bill. That is too fun. I hope that you sent that to your assembly member, because I can't imagine what would have been a better solace having that bill not pass than to get such a lovely poem in the mail. And if you haven't, I will channel my mother, who is always encouraging me to send people things like that. Please send it to her. I'm sure we can find her address still.
Totally. I will.
All right. Good. Yeah. Well, unfortunately we are out of time, but I had just such a lovely afternoon here recording the show with the two of you. This is one of my most treasured traditions here on the Eco News Report. So thank you, Jerry, and thank you, Katie, for joining and sharing your poetry with us today.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy belated solstice.
Happy belated solstice. All right. Well, join us again next week on this time and channel for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.